Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. I couldn't be more excited to present to you a very thoughtful, very interesting, very informed individual with lots of intelligence of the old-fashioned kind, personal intellectual capability, as well as insights into one of the most challenging facets of the war for the free world at the moment. And that is what's been called big tech, the very prominent, wildly successful software platforms powering our social media, what they're doing to our country, to our freedoms, to our security. His name is Zach Voorhees. He worked for a time as a senior software engineer for YouTube and Google over a period of some 8.5 years, in fact. He resigned from Google in June 2019, taking with him 950 pages of Google internal documents, which he then delivered to the Department of Justice and leaked them through Project Veritas, James O'Keefe's superb public policy information source, to apprise the rest of us about what Google was doing in the way of building the capacity for comprehensive censorship. And we're going to be talking with Zach in the course of this hour about what that looks like, what effect it is having already and is designed to have ultimately, and what it will mean for you, your kids, your future, and your country. Zach Voorhees, thank you so much for coming back to us here at Secure Freedom Radio. It's been altogether too long, but you've been busy in the meantime, and there's a lot to catch up on. So we're delighted to have an hour to do it with you. Welcome back.
Thank you, Frank. It's been good to come back. It's been too long, in fact, but there's a lot of things that have been going on, and I can't wait to tell you about them.
Great. And I to hear about them. Zach, just add a little bit more texture to your personal story, which I outlined very briefly there. What was it that prompted you after obviously a successful run in some of the most important of these platforms to decide that you had to punch out and bring to light some of the information that really troubled you from the inside?
Yeah. So I really enjoyed my time at Google, and I thought Google was a really great company for most of the time that I was working there. I remember in 2011, I had an argument with my then Russian girlfriend who had fled the Soviet Union, and she told me that Google was going to become the most evil company ever. And I remember having an argument with her, telling her that no, Google represents everything that's right with the world. You'll see. And it turned out just, 8 years later that she was 100% right. And Google very quickly from 2016 turned to the dark side. And I believed in Google's original mission statement, which was to organize the world's information and make it universally accessible and useful. And in the course of about 2 years, they completely inverted and went against everything that they stood for. And the question is why? And the answer to that is because, there was a president that they didn't like, and Google decided that,
would be
that they were going
Donald
to
Donald Trump. I think it needs to be said,
yeah,
right?
Donald Trump. Yeah. And so because they didn't like the president, they decided that they were going to start filtering all the news. And they said that the reason why he was president was because of the fake news, and that fake news was a problem. And then all of a sudden they had to start classifying it as fake news and then start removing it. And so
now, let me be clear, if I can, Zach, Donald Trump, of course, talked a lot about fake news, but the fake news, according to Donald Trump, and the fake news, according to Google, were not the same sources of information or content, right?
Well, there's a really interesting graph, right? Like, you're right. It's different. depending on who you're talking about. But if you go to trends.google.com and you type in fake news and then you type in the Podesta emails, what you're going to find is that immediately right after the Podesta email surfaced, the fake news term got injected into the consciousness of America within 24 hours. And it's never stopped. Ever since fake news was injected, it's just the media keeps on hammering it. And so Google decided that, hey, this is one of the things that we've got to now assign ourselves to take care of and be the vanguard of public opinion. We can't allow this fake news, which actually turned out to be news that was consequential to the left, from propagating on our search engine. And so they started to radically change everything with that in mind.
Okay, let me just define our terms then. Donald Trump perceived and spoke vociferously against news that he believed was simply wrong, that was factually inaccurate. Often it was very harmful to him, his family, his businesses, his government, his administration, and so on. The fake news that you're talking about, as perceived by big tech, was information that was perhaps factually correct, but inconvenient to them and their agenda. Is that a fair characterization of how we would define these terms that seem to use the same, you know, words, but mean very different things?
Yes, you're right. You know, it's basically information that's true, but damaging to the left. And the problem is that, you know, it's a very complex topic, this fake news, because there are fake news sites out there that are pushing fake, that no one reads, that pushes fake news that is close to the actual news. And so, you know, when a big corporation like Google acts, they have to have something that's true that gives them the reason for their beliefs. And so it's very clear in their documents, in the documents that I've released, that when they talk about censorship and the fake news, they go to these fringe sites that no one reads, that make articles that are close to the truth but are fake news. And then they say, we're getting rid of that fake news. Oh, and it just turns out that the collateral damage is the real news that they're actually trying to censor.
So that's, we have to take a short break, Zach, and I want to come back to this point, because whatever the justification was, this became a catalyst, it seems, for a very concerted and now increasingly sophisticated and automated means of suppressing information, suppressing fake news, as they call it, suppressing inconvenient information that they don't want mere mortals to have. We'll talk more about that and much of what is afoot now with Zach Voorhees, the author of the forthcoming book, Google Leaks, a whistleblower's expose on big tech censorship. It's available for pre-order now. Be sure to get it before its publication date of August 3rd. We'll be right back with more with Zach Voorhees right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back for this full hour conversation with a whistleblower from big tech, a man who served as a senior software engineer for YouTube and Google for 8.5 years. His name is Zach Voorhees. He is the author of an important book coming out in the summer. It's entitled Google Leaks, a whistleblower's expose on big tech censorship. So give us just a closing thought, if you would, Zach, on how Google has responded to the so-called fake news that is instructive about where they're going now to really manipulate information and conceal it from most of us where it suits their purposes.
Yeah. So right after Google you know, started talking about fake news, there was this design document that popped up on December 2016, so 1 month after the election. And they started talking about the fake news problem. And this really illustrates very concretely exactly how Google thinks about this. And what they say is that fake news is a real problem. And these are the publications that they address: Ending the Fed, The Political Insider, and The Denver Guardian. And as examples of fake news, they say Pope Francis shocks the world, endorses Donald Trump for president, releases statement. Then another headline is WikiLeaks confirms Hillary sold weapons to ISIS and drops another bombshell breaking news. Well, maybe that specific article was fake news, but think about this. ISIS, Syria, destabilization, Libya, it's very dirty, it's very complex. And what's come out is the fact that weapons were delivered from the CIA. There was a Stinger missile that was shot at an Army helicopter, and then they recovered the Stinger missile and they found out that it was something that had been given to the CIA. And so when I saw this slide and I saw that Google was declaring this as fake news and I researched it, I went, this is so close to the truth that it looks like what they're trying to do is actually censor the truth using this as a scapegoat that allows them and enables them to institute this fake news classification. And
in other words, to have a pretext for censorship.
Exactly. And if they're going to create a definition of fake news, then my next question was, what's the thing that's going to filter it for the internet? And as I dug in, I discovered what that was. It was a previously secret program, and was secret at the time, known as machine learning fairness.
So machine learning fairness sounds as though it's actually a benign activity, one that would be laudable as you're trying to improve the quality of, machines' performance, obviously, artificial intelligence and so on. But what is actually meant by it, Zach?
So machine learning fairness is to build a new internet where the data is no longer biased. See, this is the problem with what Google says that we're generating biased data because we're inherently racist. And as a result, that data is causing injustice to be amplified by the algorithms that operate on the data.
Now, when you say the term data is used, do they mean that interchangeably with content, meaning stuff that wouldn't necessarily be considered data, but just as opinion? It's in prose rather than numbers?
All of it, yeah. So let's say you make a social media post on Facebook or Twitter. That's data. And that data reflects our own internal biases. And so what Google has declared is that the data that we're producing is racist, which dovetails with the critical race theory that says that we're all racist. And so in order to eliminate race and racism and bias and xenophobia from the internet, Google took it upon themselves to implement this machine learning fairness in order to build a utopian version of the internet, which all of these human biases have been eliminated. And what's really telling about this was a question of, well, you know, if something was factually accurate, could that be considered unfair? And Google's response to this was yes. And the example they gave was, let's say someone was searching for an image of a CEO and Google Images returns mostly pictures of men. Even if that accurately reflects the state of objective reality, it can still be considered algorithmically unfair and result in fixing up by this machine learning fairness.
Okay, so let's translate this into plain English. When you have somebody who is presenting a reality that is deemed politically incorrect, for want of a better term, unsatisfactory, evidence of perceived racism or xenophobia or something else, the machine is being taught through this so-called fairness arrangement program to weed that out, to simply make it unavailable to people using the internet?
Yeah. And the way that they make it unavailable is they put it on the back pages of Google search. They don't actually have to completely eliminate it from the internet. Google's realized that if they just take something that used to be on the front page and put it to the 15th page, then it might as well be censored.
Yeah, I think Robert Epstein has actually found that if you just move it down two or three from the top, it's as good as on the 15th page, isn't it? It's amazing that the power of placement. In fact, there's a whole industry built around that, isn't there?
Yeah, and there is. It's called search engine optimization. And before, the way that search engine optimization worked is that you had good content and people clicked it, and therefore you got organic SEO, which put you at the top pages. Now,
just on the basis of the popularity of the posting.
Right. The organicness of the posting itself. And now you've got to follow, you know, a social justice protocol, so that if you say the wrong thing or you have the wrong opinion, then you may have a negative mark. And that negative mark comes through, get ready for this, Wikipedia, which is the main source of information that Google uses to give you a secret page rank score on your website. And so when they go and they prescribe this page rank score, they look at a variety of factors. What does the media have to say about you? What does Wikipedia have to say about you? And if what Wikipedia says is not good, then your business is going to be destroyed, because all of your organic traffic that used to come through Google will completely dry up. And this is what's happened over and over and over again with a lot of the health advocates out there, like Dr. Mercola, who's independent and does his own studies. He used to be at the very top of the search results. And then with one update, he saw 99% of his traffic absolutely collapse.
I myself have been subject of some very aggressive, well, I would call it political warfare at the hands of Wikipedia over the years, and can attest to the impact of this instrument in the hands of people who are simply using it to smear you. But what you're talking about, Zach, is infinitely worse, isn't it? It means that you're essentially having those smears force-fed into algorithms that will translate into censorship, canceling, or punishments of other kinds, I take it.
Yeah, and there has to be a consensus. Now, you know, there's a minority consensus that owns Wikipedia and owns the media, and they're the ones that are defining what the consensus is, and you can't challenge that. No one sued Wikipedia for defamation, which at this point, it seems to be converted from a source of information to a defamation laundering operation. And, you know, the reason why that's happening is because Google's using it as a source of truth. And when you go and look at these companies, what you'll find is that they're outsourcing their censorship. So Google itself, they may have like their own sort of like, you know, committee inside that determines what's going to be censored. But most of that censorship decision process is coming from companies that they've outsourced this to. So the ADL. The SLPC.
The Southern Poverty Law Center, right. They're subcontractors to the people to whom they're contracting this all out, namely Wikipedia. And just to be clear, the Southern Poverty Law Center, again, having vilified me repeatedly, I can speak with some authority about this, is a political warfare instrument itself. It is aimed at trying to silence those who disagree with its radical left agenda, whether it's on, you know, racism or xenophobia or other grounds that they are constantly inveighing against other people about. Turns out they're a racist organization themselves, according to a number of their employees and some investigations that have been done. But still, to the extent that they are able to essentially, as you said, launder defamation through Wikipedia and in turn get it amplified enormously by Google, it is a very, very powerful instrument in the hands of those who are, I believe, working to take down our country by, among other things, trying to silence those who stand in their way. Zach, we have to take another quick break. We will be right back with much more with Zach Voorhees. We're going to talk next about the ways in which this machine learning business is now operating on the COVID-19 front and the impact for our society of it doing so. This is fascinating stuff. And Zach Voorhees, a whistleblower from Google, is sharing his insights in a way that I think will be greatly compounded by further information that will be coming out in his new book, Google Leaks, a Whistleblower's Exposé on Big Tech Censorship, and some new platforms of his own that will be making much of this vital information more readily available to us. All of that on August 3rd. So stay tuned, folks, most immediately for our next segment, and then for Zach's work on the 3rd of August, right after this.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, and we're visiting for this full hour with a wickedly smart and very courageous whistleblower from big tech. He worked for Google for a number of years. He's now become a source of information about what Google is up to and what it will mean for all of us. His name is Zach Voorhees. He is the author of a forthcoming book, Google Leaks, a whistleblower's expose on big tech censorship. So, Zach, you've set the stage, I think, very helpfully in terms of how Google in the 2016 period became engaged in using the immense power that it and Facebook and Twitter and others with whom it very actively collaborates to try to, well, first of all, drive Donald Trump from office, I would say, but also to silence those who may agree with Donald Trump or may not, but certainly are not acting in a manner or writing or speaking or producing videos in a manner consistent with the party line, as the Marxists would call it, coming out of Silicon Valley and big tech. Bring us up to the minute, if you would, on how all of this is translating now into a very aggressive program with respect to COVID, or I call it Chinese Communist Party virus, related narratives and what we're allowed to know about the truth.
Yeah, so about this time last year, Zero Hedge got banned from Twitter for posting information related to a leak at the Wuhan lab. And apparently that was debunked at the time. Fox wrote an article saying how it was a debunked conspiracy theory. And anyone that was pushing that was demonized in the media. And now 1 year later, where are we with that narrative? We're seeing that it's actually true and that right now they're saying that they can't discount the theory. But I believe that as we progress, it's going to morph into, yeah, actually, this was a virus that was released from a Chinese institution. And the information coming out from that is that this institution wasn't just something that was done by Google, by China. It was also something that probably had funding and material support by operatives from the United States. And so is this a China virus? Is this a deep state virus? We don't really know what it is yet, but we do know that big tech is doing everything that they can to control the information landscape surrounding this virus, and that the rules seem to be evolving as this pandemic morphs for their political advantage, right? Like with when the virus came out, there was an initiative across multiple states to change all the voting laws to allow, you know, instead of an election week, an election season where they keep on counting all these mail-in ballots. And then after the election was done, Time Magazine bragged about how this secret cabal of people got together across different industries to change all the election laws to what they used, quote, fortify the election. And now that that election is over and Biden is the president that's been certified by the process, what we see now is that there's a huge push to get everyone vaccinated. And I've got friends that have been vaccinated, they get sick. And for whatever reason, these new fourth generation mRNA vaccines are making people really sick. There's reports now that women are having irregular periods. I've looked for fertility studies that have been done on these vaccines, and strangely, they've all been absent. They've never tested these vaccines to see whether it will cause like a spontaneous abortion or a miscarriage. And so whether these vaccines are actually safe is something that needs to be scientifically determined.
Zach, can you hold the thought? Because I want to go back to something you said a moment ago before we drill down on that point. We had Dr. Michael Yeadon on yesterday in a fascinating conversation about this vaccine business and the impact on fertility and so on. But before we get to that, talk us through a little bit more this Time Magazine report and the way in which the big tech giants really weaponize their platforms to assure Donald Trump's defeat and Joe Biden's victory, if I understand what you're saying correctly. And I think that was the gist of the reporting of this Molly Ball, was it, in Time?
Yeah. So a bunch of different titans across different industries sort of collaborated together in order to change the election laws, to extend mail-in balloting. And they didn't do it through a way that was defined by the Constitution, which is done by the legislatures. Like, America's got a really great system. The legislatures of the states have the responsibility for running the elections. And the executive branch with the Secretary of State took over that role in several different states and ramrodded through new election changes because it was an emergency caused by this COVID-19 disease. So
that became the pretext for unconstitutional activity that translated predictably into the opportunities for fraud to take place. And the question that is now being evaluated in places like Arizona is that what happened? Did fraud in fact take place, material fraud that changed the outcome of the election? And I guess you can comment on that if you'd like to, but the main point is big tech together with big media, and it seems lots of people in state governments, particularly in the swing states, if not the federal government, were participating in an effort to ensure that the voting could be rigged as a practical matter. And this is chilling.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. You know, we first saw it with the Wuhan lab theory that was suppressed last year. I think it was March or February of 2020. And then all of the different antivirals that turned out to be effective against COVID to various degrees. The big one that we all know is hydroxychloroquine, but that actually wasn't even that good of a cure. There was one medicine called ivermectin, which is a one-dose kill the COVID remedy. And I mean, it really wasn't that controversial outside of the United States. Several countries like India were giving out ivermectin for free to everyone that wanted it. And in the United States, it seemed to be highly controversial. The hydroxychloroquine, which is mildly effective against COVID-19 if you take it early, that was suppressed. The media suppressed it. Google suppressed it. You could get kicked off if you talked about the effectiveness of hydroxychloroquine. You got kicked off of YouTube if you talked about vitamin D and vitamin C as being preventative of COVID-19. People don't really remember that.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely right. But here's the thing, isn't it, Zach, that as Dr. Yeadon told us yesterday, this was necessary. This suppression of these other potential remedies was absolutely vital if you were to get the emergency use authorization for the vaccines. They could only be given that emergency use authority without the kind of comprehensive testing that would otherwise be required if there were no other means of addressing this pandemic and its consequences?
Well, the thing that would avoid the emergency use authorization would be an existing cure. And so, you know, if ivermectin exists and it's a one shot, you know, get rid of, you know, reverse the COVID-19 disease, then how can anyone get a emergency use authorization when there's an existing cure? The cure, you know, contradicts the emergency use authorization, which is the reason why I believe that big tech colluded with the media, colluded with big pharma in order to push the narrative that there was no cure and that the only thing that was going to save us was going to be this vaccine. And this is where we are today. And now...
And you must take the vaccine is where we are today, I guess. And essentially what you're saying, Zach, is that this machine learning fairness sort of program became a vehicle for advancing any number of agendas that the big tech giants and their friends in, you know, politics and corporate boardrooms across the country of other kinds and the other titans, as you put it, deemed to be the appropriate public policy. And it's kind of chilling when you realize that, especially if you talk a little bit more about this, the degree to which this artificial intelligence learning process is honing the abilities to make these kinds of capabilities available on essentially autopilot and on a vast scale worldwide, no?
Yes, and they're onboarded by an army of paid raiders that exist at these social media companies like Facebook and Twitter. In fact, I'm friends with some of them that became whistleblowers with Project Veritas. And they know what they're doing. And what they're doing is that as they manually flag these posts, they're training an all-powerful AI system to figure out how to do it automatically.
Zach, hold the thought. We have to take one last break. When we come back, I want you to drill down on the implications of that and the degree to which we will find ourselves, if some course correction is not taken here, essentially shutting down and purging, for all intents and purposes, anyone who deviates from, as I say, the big tech party line. That and more will be topic A when we come back with Zach Voorhees, the author of the forthcoming book, Google Leaks, a whistleblower's expose on big tech censorship. Advance order it now. We'll be right back with more with Zach right after this.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back to this fourth and final installment of our extremely illuminating and, well, frankly, chilling conversation with a Google and YouTube whistleblower by the name of Zach Voorhees. Zach has been bringing to the attention of the Justice Department and the public at large, in collaboration with a terrific organization by James O'Keefe's Project Veritas, information about what big tech is up to and what it will mean for all of us. But I think in his forthcoming book, Google Leaks, A Whistleblower's Exposé on Big Tech Censorship, and some of the ancillary materials and platforms that he will be unveiling on its publication date of August 3rd, we're going to be learning even more about what is now underway and, again, what the consequences might be for not just us as individuals, but for our country as well. And so, Zach, let's finish up this larger point by talking about the extent to which this business of the raiders using their ratings to try to enhance the artificial intelligence capabilities of big tech to essentially autonomously purge information, censor it, suppress it, make it unavailable worldwide in multiple languages, and what kind of world that means we're likely to live in if they have their way.
Yeah, it's a scary new world that we're going into. And, you know, I keep on thinking back to the way that things used to be, where the San Bernardino shooter had an iPhone and there was a narrative that we couldn't let the government see a terrorist's cell phone because that would set a dangerous precedent. And look at where we're at right now. Even the post office is getting in on the surveillance of Americans. Everything's being censored, and we're entering into uncharted territory that is quite frankly anti-American. And everything that's happening with this COVID-19 epitomizes what's wrong with big tech, with the control of the thoughts, the control of what we're able to post, what we're able to see, and who we're able to read.
And is there any doubt in your mind that there is a method to all of this? Whether one uses the term conspiracy or not, that's a personal choice, I guess. But there is a design, a purpose that is animating this kind of building technology and the capabilities that it enables and its application in these ways. Is that right?
I mean, yeah, you know, and we have to figure out how we're going to stop this thing, because if a close set of influencers are able to determine the truth and objective reality and censor everything that contradicts that, then how can we run elections? How can we have a democratic system of government if only those people that conform to the narrative are allowed to be presented to the American people? I mean, this is a takeover. And we have to realize that what's happening right now is a form of takeover. It's a war without a shot being fired. And it's being done by people that promised that they wouldn't do this as part of their manifesto for existing. You know, when Google went IPO, they put out this constitution saying that they weren't going to do any sort of political censorship. We wrote it into law that they weren't going to do any political censorship with the creation of Section 230. Now that's all been burned and thrown away within the course of 4 years. And now we've got to build the alternative systems. We have to restore judicial precedent in being able to sue these companies for discrimination. We need to have a new civil rights era for political thought and political freedom. We essentially need to restore the First Amendment to the American people.
Otherwise, we are succumbing to, high-tech coup d'etat, really, that will make this country unrecognizable in the future, let alone one that we want to live in. And Zach, this brings me to some good news that you're working on as we speak. I've had a chance to sample a little bit of it, though it's not available for public release just yet. But talk about what you're trying to do to begin to help the rest of us facilitate communications, especially those that are now being blocked or obstructed or otherwise hindered by big tech.
Well, you know, I tried to stop big tech by warning everyone what big tech was about to do. And then when big tech started purging Trump supporters, I did a crowdfund and sued Google. That got blocked by the courts. I mean, the case is still going on, but it doesn't look like it's going to be successful. And so, you know, I've warned people. I've tried to sue Google. That hasn't worked. And so what I realized is that the best way that I can fight against this technocracy and restore the First Amendment for the American people is to build the technology myself. And so over the last 3 months, I've worked every single day really hard on what I call the Drudge Report, but for video. And what I've done is I've gone out there and I found pretty much every single person that has weekly or daily videos that they release on YouTube or BitChute or Rumble or Brighteon or Spreaker. And I've taken these videos and I scan them every hour, and then I combine them all in one single website. And the benefit of this is that people right now, they have to navigate a fractured ecosystem to find quality commentary. And we used to just get this by YouTube's recommendation algorithm. But since everything's fractured, everyone's spending a lot of time every single day in order to get this commentary. With my new system that's all been eliminated, it's all under one single page. And anyone that wants to be informed about what's happening today and have a conservative or, you know, just anti-globalist opinion. I mean, I don't even know if it's conservative. It's just anti-globalist. Like, we want to
pro-American
love our country. We want to, yeah, it's pro-American.
Start there. So, positive.
So if anyone wants to have a pro,
go ahead. Finish that thought.
If anyone wants to have a pro-American source of news, then this is going to answer that call. And I'm going to release it with my book on August 3rd. And I can't wait. I would love to release it right now, but you know, we're going to give it a little bit more polish, and we're going to release it with a book. And I believe it's going to be a game changer for politics in America.
Well, it's certainly needed, and needed arguably just as soon as you can get it done and out the door. But I understand the vicissitudes of publications and promotion of your important book. Zach, I guess I would just like to leave our audience with a sense that if we understand the nature of what big tech is trying to do to us, there are still opportunities working with people like yourself, working with platforms like the one you're going to be unveiling on the 3rd of August, taking to heart some of your own hard experiences and lessons and the whistleblowing you've been doing to have things come out differently. Is that unduly Pollyannish, or is that actually the case?
I mean, that's what we're looking for. We're looking for a different outcome. And the reason why, you know, the global community establishment has begun to censor is because they know that they can't win in a free market of ideas. And rather than allow that free market of ideas to exist and contradict the things that they're saying with their takeover, they've decided that they're just going to eliminate everyone's opinion. And in that vacuum, they hope that their ideas will proliferate, but that's not working out very well. And the question is, if we come out with a way to bypass their censorship, are they going to try to shut down the entire internet and turn us into a colony of China? And I don't know the answer to that question, but I intend to find out.
Well, China is one of our passions here at Secure Freedom Radio and our Committee on the Present Danger, China. And as you find out, Zach Voorhees, I hope that you will make a point of doubling back with us and keeping us apprised, because I fear that is part of the agenda. We're watching Google and these other big tech giants only too happy to throw in with not just the Chinese Communist Party, but the People's Liberation Army, for heaven's sakes. People who say they won't be involved with the U.S. Defense Department are all good with that, which is outrageous. Zach, we have to leave it at that at the moment. I hope that we'll be talking with you again very soon. In the meantime, thank you for this great hour of conversation and your incredible insights into the nature of big tech and its war on America. We'll talk with you again soon. And again, congratulations on the forthcoming Google Leaks, a whistleblower's expose on big tech censorship. Pre-order it today, if you would, folks. I hope then you will join us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.